Sam, what's up? Welcome to the fight, buddy.
How you doing, Tom? Great to be here.
You know, it's pretty cool when we hop on and the first words out of your mouth were, "Hey, I just sold a house." So that's way to go. You're a couple hours ahead of me. So what is it, 12:30 your time, East Coast?
Yep, 12:30 over here.
So, and hey, you know what just popped up on my screen? My daughter, one of my daughters, it's her birthday today, and she just texted me and just popped up on my screen. She says, "I think I'm going to get another tattoo today." So there you go. So
that's awesome.
I got to shut these alerts off, man, before I get distracted. So
yeah, tell her I said happy birthday.
I will. So listen, you got this little enterprise going over there in New Jersey, and you've been part of the Contractor Fight for a few years now. You know, and I reached out to you and I'm like, dude, what's your story, man? Because like every now and then I'll catch something that's intriguing to me. And so I'm going to read a little bit of the message you sent me. You said I have 42. this is pretty cool because I think guys, you're going to want to hear this interview. All right. I have 42 full-time employees. I do 15 to 17 jobs a day. It's you and one other sales guy. You added a bathroom division this year, which started February 1st. Okay. And by the way, you guys, this message was on February 13th at 6:22 PM. Okay. So Sam's like, yeah, I added a bathroom division, which started February 1st and booked 14 jobs since that day. So in 13 days, you booked 14 jobs. And then there's a bunch of other stuff. You've done a lot of flips. Would you say you have about 40, 42 rentals with no mortgages? So you got a lot of things going on. You got the, by the way, in his spare time, he was ripping out his basement, even though there was nothing wrong with it, to redesign it. So what'd your wife think of that? Was she fired up about that?
She's not too happy with me. She says, hey, we're done. But she already knows how I roll. And yeah, as long as I'm ready for my June party, we have a June party. Okay. She's okay with it.
So June is the drop dead date, man. There you go.
That's it.
So listen, there's a lot here to unpack. I just want to give people some highlights here, but how long have you been at this thing, man? How long have you been?
I've been at this full time for 18 years total, full time after I left my police job for about 15 years now.
Okay.
So,
and how long?
I'll give you my quick backstory. So yeah, my backstory, you know, growing up, I went to Catholic school my whole life. I watched my father pretty much. He was a plumber. He ran everything. He wore every hat. He was the sales guy. He was the head installer. He was the guy picking up the guy with no driver's license every day, his helper, dropping him off, going on an estimate, coming home at night, and then spending the rest of the night typing up the estimates and then faxing them or mailing them out. That's what they did back then. There was no email.
Yeah.
So I always said, hey, you really need to, you know, why don't you get like a sales guy? He's like, that never works. You never could do it. And I'm thinking, man, that's not how I would do it. So long story short, I went a different way. At 17, I joined the Army. So my junior year of high school, they shipped me out to Fort Knox, Kentucky. Spent my junior summer there, came back, finished my senior summer. Then went right into advanced training. My senior summer came out. Then I ended up in Camden County Jail, the worst jail, probably in the United States, worst city in the United States. I was there for 5 years. But I wasn't there as an inmate. I was a correction officer. So I just want to get that straight.
Yeah, I figured.
While I was there, I started looking at the guys that were at their end of the years, those guys in retirement. I go, I definitely don't want to be that guy. Because that guy just looked like a broken down old man or woman, whoever they were. So I said, you know, I've definitely had bigger goals. Even when I was at the jail, I used to, you know, again, I didn't have a lot of money growing up. I grew up in aerial, you know, middle class, blue collar workers at best. So what I did is I always set goals. So literally I drew an old thermostat, and you know, at the top of that thermostat was $10,000. So literally, yeah, as I'd work overtime and no one will work harder than me, I literally start to fill in that little thermostat until I got to that 10,000. Once I got to that 10,000, I was 19 years old then, I bought my first rental property, which was a duplex. So my dad, you know, how he is, I had to pay as soon as I turned 18, I had to pay $100 a week to him. So when I bought my rental property, I'm like, this will offset that. He says, hey, Sam, you have to give me half of your profit. I said, what? I said, half my profit? That's going to offset my $100 a week I pay already. I was to stay here a couple more years and I'm out of here. And he said, no, I need half. So I ended up moving out. So anyway, long story short with that, my mortgage was $850. I rented out the one unit for $750. I lived for $100 a month. So that was my thing. I like to live cheap. So I stayed there for a while. I bought this thing. I bought this book because I like doing work on the house. I bought this book. It's before YouTube, because now that you have YouTube, you can learn how to do anything, right? That's how I saw you. I said, oh man, this guy's unbelievable. I started following you, learned a bunch of stuff, but back then YouTube wasn't available. So I went to Home Depot and I bought the Home Depot 1-2-3 book. I still have it today in my office. So literally,
I remember those, man. I remember those. Yep.
Oh, they're great. They're great. So what I ended up doing is, as I was learning to do different things, I kind of built it up and I said, you know what? I'm going to buy a rental property. So bought another rental property. I started fixing that up. It was able to secure rent, making $300 a month. Long story short, there is I ended up buying two more, became a police officer. I was a police officer for 5 years. I had my business going now. Now I have my construction business going. You know, it was hard. It wasn't easy. And then once I got to a certain point, I had 10 years in total. I decided to leave. It wasn't really working on the police. And I was making about the same as a police officer as I was construction. Everyone's like, oh, it's crazy. You're going to lose your pension. You're going to lose this. And, you know, me working like the crazy nut I was, I just literally went out there and went full force. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to price. Honestly, I wish I would have met a coach earlier on in my career, not later on, because, you know, coaches will save you years and years of time and experience. So it's worth every single penny to pay you whatever it is to get to that next level. I know that now. I wish I knew it then. But, you know, growing, I had one employee. My employee became my helper. You know, 18 years later, you know, his whole family works for me. His uncle, his cousin, his son, all great people. We grew into a company where when I left the police department, I had $30,000 to my name. I bought a property for $30,000. Took me 6 months to fix it up because I had no money. So as I'd make money with the construction, I'd fix it up little by little myself on the weekends. So after another $30,000 and 6 months of working, I sold it for $127 total. So now I had money. So that next year, I'd buy a house. I had a routine. It was buy it for $70, put $30 into it, and I was done in a month or less. And I sell for $170. Now I had money. So my thing was I'd flip two houses, and then I buy a house cash. I flip two houses, I buy a house cash. I worked all the way up to, I buy a house almost every single week. Before COVID, I did something where I bought 72 total deals in 1 year. My best year, did phenomenal. COVID hits the next year. Now my whole life is, you know, we already had the construction thing going. Was it going where it's at now? No. So I was basically like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I'll buy, you know, COVID happened. I'll buy some houses. So I buy a couple houses. Yeah. 2 weeks, it was dead. And then all of a sudden, the floodgates opened. My phone was ringing nonstop. It was literally night and day going out working, plus the flips. And then I got lucky. You know, when I say lucky, I feel like this. You only get lucky if you put yourself in a lucky position, meaning you're out there working hard and trying to get better every single day, which I try and do because, again, I'm not perfect.
Yeah.
But what I ended up doing was I hooked in with one of the Eagles players, Vinny Curry. He was on the Jets. Now he's retired. He's one of my best friends. I talk to him almost every single day now. The backstory to that was I don't even like watching football. I like playing football.
Yeah.
My wife's like, hey, let's get these tickets. I'm like, no. I don't. Again, I told you I was cheap, Tom. So I basically said, yeah, we'll get the tickets. So I get the tickets. The one time she doesn't go with me, I brought my buddy. It was a Monday night game because the kids had school the next day. I go out and I must have met him. And honestly, Tom, I didn't remember. I must have drank too much that night.
Yeah.
So in the morning, my wife wakes me up and says, hey, Sam, who did called you at 2 o'clock in the morning? I said, I have no idea. And she's like, you told me he was a football player. I said, maybe it was. So she's like, call it. I said, all right. I called on three-way. And sure enough, it was Vinny Curry. And he goes, hey, you know, I was with one of my friends. And he said you did, you know, his buddy's basement. It was unbelievable. And I had done it like 7 years before.
Yeah.
So he's like, I want one of my banters done. So I ended up picking him up from NovaCare. That's where the Eagles practice. Drive him back to his house because we knew another mutual friend that does cars, like fixes up everybody's car. He does like high-end cars. So I drive him back to his house. I did his first bathroom. I wasn't even done, and my guys were still there. He had the guys ripping out the second bathroom.
Wow.
So I had to stop him. Like, hold on, buddy. Hold on. He's like, you're doing all my bathrooms. So I'm like, okay. And then, you know, you always get those customers that tell you, they'll never, you know, I'll give you so many customers. I'm like, yeah, no problem. And you never see any.
Right.
Well, let me tell you, it was the exact opposite with him. He has given me every single Eagles player that's come on, new players, new coaches, and it's kind of been going on from there. So I'm blessed that way with getting all the new coaches. Unfortunately, you know, we lost a lot of coaches because the second half of the year wasn't too good.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is good for me because more business. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of my story in a nutshell as far as what I do.
So I don't want to make an assumption here, but did you start the construction thing to fund the goals you had to build real estate? Like, is that why you started a construction company? Okay.
Yeah. So I originally started a construction company just to offset my cost for my real estate. Cause I knew my end goal for generational wealth is, hey, take this construction money because you can make phenomenal money and then put it toward real estate. And then that real estate will keep on bringing money every single year, every single day. And it's the only way I can make money when I'm sleeping. And I'm not that smart. So putting it together, instead of putting it banking in somebody else, I'll invest in myself and invest in properties to make the money back.
Yeah. Because what's standing out to me, what's jumping out as you're telling your story is, and I'm curious where this comes from, you seem to be, I mean, obviously, you grew up watching your dad go to the army, you're a cop, run a business, successful. So I'm not surprised, but like you have this degree of financial discipline that I think a lot of people don't have. Yeah. Okay. Like self-control and discipline. I'm curious, where did you get that?
So I guess growing up and not really having much of anything, you kind of learn that, you only spend what you have. I don't spend any more. So I took that same business concept. My first truck was when I left the police department, was a $2,200 minivan. So, and that minivan, everyone was making fun of me. They're like, oh, look at Sam, they used to call me Sam the Carpet Man.
Yeah.
Now I drive a Lamborghini and a TRX and a brand new G Wagon. So, and I pay for none of that, by the way. All my rentals pay for everything. So my whole goal was, if I don't have it coming in for my rentals, I don't buy it. And that's it. And I did that with my properties down the shore. My first rental property, and I was against it because it was a lot of money at the time. My wife was all about it. I like buying properties for $30,000, $40,000cash and then doing it. But, my first property I bought for $460,000. It's now worth $900,000. And I rent it for $5,000 a week. I got, I used that. I would do three weeks a year. I would do Labor Day, 4th of July, and Memorial Day. We would rent there. So I was spending $10,000. I'm like, wait, I'm spending $10,000. If I buy this property, maybe I could kind of break even. That's my whole goal in life. Let me live for free. Yeah. So I buy the property. I use the 3 weeks. I end up making $17,000 profit, save my $10,000. That was a $27,000 swing. Yeah. Now I'm down the Jersey Shore, and I'm not a Jersey Shore boy. Every summer from Thursday to Monday, and I built my business down there too. And we're down the shore. We start working in October. When everything dies, I got my crews there every day. From October to May, we're there. And then I bought my first hotel down there. I bought that cash last year. It's right on Beach Block. It's got 8 units. We bought it for $1 million, put about $600 into it. I'm going to sell for about $3.7 million. And we're going to be listing that within the next 2 weeks. And then just from being around, and you start to build a name for yourself. Now kind of everyone knows me around here. And another lady walked by, said, hey, Sam, you want to come by my house too? I said, sure, when I'm done work, I'll come over, no problem. And sure enough, I bought her house. We're knocking it down, building a new construction house there. So you kind of got to have fun with it too.
So somebody listening to this, maybe they've been in the game for a while and they're not as successful as they want to be, or maybe they're brand new and they're like listening to you. Like, it's easy to go, man, look at Sam. He's on the top of the hill right now. What advice do you give to that person to start making this journey towards the success that they want? I'm just curious, because obviously you didn't like wiggle your genie nose and it happened in a month, right? Like, it's been a 18-year journey.
Yep.
So what are some of the, I guess, main takeaways you would want to give somebody to succeed like this?
Yeah. So, the first thing is nothing's get rich quick. There's nothing getting rich quick. It doesn't happen. I don't believe in that. It's, it's get rich slow, hard work, perseverance, and consistency. I can tell you with anything, if you stay consistent with anything, over time, it's going to grow. And if you grow it with a strong foundation, it, it can't be stopped. So I think the biggest thing for businesses is, number one, invest in yourself. Definitely take the time out to find somebody that's good in the construction business, to find yourself a coach.
Yep.
Like you, Tom, I'll be honest with you. Even me, I got so many great takeaways from your videos. One, in fact, being a couple of years ago when I joined that contractor fight, that whole thing, just double your whatever it is, double it.
Double your cost.
I'm way too much money. And I'm like, you know what? I did. I started doubling it.
Yeah.
And then as I started doubling, I'm like, oh my God, Tom's right. This is unbelievable. And honestly, that helped me get to where I'm at now. And another thing I did is I read a book called Traction from Gino Wickman.
Yeah. Great book.
That book was instrumental for me because, again, I have a great team. Like, I have a great people around me. I feel like we've been doing this a long time, and everybody tries to help out. I think the biggest issue there for me was everyone was trying to do everything, and no one was accountable for anything. And that's the biggest takeaway I'll say. As people start to grow, you need to have accountability. You might not be able to do the chart right away, but at least if you start cracking at it, when you start taking what's in your head and writing it down, and then trying to grow from year to year, that's the best way to do it. And then, honestly, what I did in the beginning was, hey, start small. So get a job. You know, even if you have to go a little cheaper, get a job. Yeah. Start putting those bids out. If you have no money, you want to start your business, I don't know if you're supposed to say this or not, don't get insurance at first. You know what I mean? Do whatever you got to do to start bringing that money in first. Because people are like, hey, I got to get everything perfect before I start my business. The problem with perfect is there is no perfect. I am far from perfect. Every mistake that could be made, I made every single one of them. It's just, let me try and make less mistakes, learn from mistakes to get better. Yeah. So
how long were you in the field in your business? How many years?
Yep. So I was in the field a total of 4 years.
Okay. So the first 4 years, what I would do nothing is, but the field. Yeah. Okay.
No. Yeah. So I started learning tile, and I hired a tile helper. And then once that helper got good enough where he could do it himself, I just started doing like almost like a hybrid where I was the sales and I was the tile guy. Then I just became the sales guy. You know what I mean? Then I hired another tile guy, and then I had two tile guys. Then I hired carpet subs, and I was doing a ton. I do no carpet, by the way, now, but I was doing a ton of carpet. I'd have two carpet trucks coming to me because originally I started, you know, after a construction company, I started Showcase Flooring because I was in and out in a day. And with my cop job, it was hard to do both. I didn't want to be married to a fire job for 6 or 7 months when I didn't have the time. But once I left, you know, the police department, then that opened me up to be able to do everything that I wanted to do. So yeah, I guess the biggest thing is, you know, I started to grow and you know, do less of the work in the field, more of the leadership, take on that leadership role and kind of grow the business that way.
Was there a certain position in the company that was the hardest for you to delegate?
Yeah. So I think delegation is like one of the most important things for a business to be able to scale. I feel like I still fail every day at it, but I'm trying to get better at it every day because I'm one of those guys that I like to be hands-on to the point where I'm becoming the bottleneck of the company.
Yeah.
And you don't want that. So again, I never worked for anybody else, so I didn't know how to do it. So I built everything around me. Like I learned how to do all the kitchens so I could walk into a house, any house, and I could do just about everything. I could lay the kitchen out. I know every size cabinet. I do the drawings myself still to this day. If I go to an estimate, I could sell you a kitchen. I could do the layout. We could order it the same day. I could have it in 2 weeks. And that was like my thing. But I'm like, yo, how do I grow? And that's how I decided to go in a different direction this year. And I started studying it last June, but that's how I started doing the one-day bathroom. But you could do it with anything. You could do it with painting. You could do it with, you know, roofing, siding, windows. Some of those jobs that are able to be able to select a few things, come up with your own business idea, business plan, make it scalable, and then execute.
So this is interesting. There's so many different things that I'm thinking of here with you. And one of them is you've been in the group long enough to see the posts where guys are like, I'm starting another division. I'm starting another division. I'm opening another location. And every time I see that, I'm like, I could probably bet my left testicle that they're doing that prematurely and they shouldn't do that. You know what I mean? So, and you've opened other divisions through the years successfully. So I'm curious, how do you know it's the right time to open another division if somebody's thinking of doing that?
Okay. So that's a great question. So I can tell you a lot of people, which I didn't really realize, I get a lot of people write me and say, hey, I heard you speak the other night. So I speak a couple little local real estate events and then, you know, just a couple little podcasts, Builder Trend, a couple other ones. But I didn't realize that people actually watch it. So first thing is, people do watch you, social media do watch you. But I think getting back to what you're talking about, a good thing to do as far as opening a division is make sure what you have running is running self-sufficiently without you, and you're pulling the gross profit that you want to pull. Before you do anything else, get everything where it's able to be ran without you. And if you can, don't even try and do the other part. So I think the biggest takeaway with that is, hey, get what you have under control before you start that next step, which would be a division out the company, so that you can profit, you know, that way as well.
Yeah. Because your one day bath thing that you got going, are you kind of spearheading that? So everything else is running and you kind of took that by the reins and said, I'm going to run with this and make it my baby? Or did you hire somebody else to run that and you still doing the core? Like, what's that look like?
So I did hire people to run it. So what was great is, you know, I pretty much, before I even started just the division, I started studying other companies that do it. Mm-hmm. I seen their pro forma. I started writing down my goals. I started writing down, you know, how much, and again, I spend $0 for marketing. I haven't done marketing in 14 years. And Tom, I could tell you, I do probably 5 to 6 leads a day. And out of those, I probably get 4 or 5. I never go out to a job unless I know I'm going to get that job.
Yeah.
Myself. Yeah. Now, if I think I might not get it or there's a chance of getting it, I send one of my vice presidents, I send him out there.
Yeah.
And honestly, he does a phenomenal job of getting the job. And we've grown so much that we get so many leads coming in that I delegated out and he's doing a phenomenal job for me. Now, I think for the one day bathroom, you know, it's a lot to take on. And if you don't have a lot of money to begin with to put into it, you're going to fail. So what you got to do is, like I said, it can't be perfect. If you're new, get what you have perfect, spend a little bit of money, see what that return on investment is, but always have money coming in. Don't keep spending. But yes, I hired a production manager. I hired a sales manager, but it's also a salesman. And then I have a second salesman. And these guys are seasoned in the company. Yeah. I feel like since my company has grown, we're able to attract better talent and able to have more people because in the community that we're at, we do have densely populated. But I think everyone knows me around here. So once you build that rapport and people know you, I think it's a lot easier. But to get there, I think that, you know, you kind of got to build it little by little.
So what's interesting is you have 42 employees, roughly, right?
Yep.
And you probably have subs in addition to that?
Yes.
As well, right? Okay.
Yes.
And a minute ago, you said you really don't do any marketing. So I would say you do. It's just you're marketing in a different way with a better experience, right? You're delivering a great experience, which gets people talking and then you get referred. So it's the ultimate word of mouth business you have going on, it seems, right? And a lot of, and I get it. I mean, a lot of guys I'll do a post or a video about marketing and people are like, I haven't marketed a day in my life and it's all word of mouth. Yet it's not Sam telling me this. It's some guy who's still making 60 grand a year after being in business for 23 years. Okay. And he's waiting for the next job to come in and all this other shit. Like that's usually who says things like that. So I'm curious, like you've built this multi-million dollar company with 42 employees without a real marketing plan or ad spend and stuff like that. So how'd that happen?
Okay. So I think I'm going to rephrase. I don't pay for marketing.
Okay.
But I spend a lot of time on marketing.
All right. So there you go.
Yeah. So I think you maybe actually rethink the whole thing.
Okay. Yeah. Because you're like, we don't do any marketing. So I was like,
right.
Okay.
I actually do a lot of marketing. I think you just changed my whole.
Let me, before you say anything, I was, you know, the other day I was on your Instagram or Facebook or whatever, and you were at an event at some event in the community. You had these really cool shoes on, by the way, in your colorful jacket. It was funny as hell. And you know, you and your wife are there. So I know, like, to me, that's marketing, right? You're doing things in the community and so anyway, go ahead.
So, I mean, a couple of things. So I market every single day. I market myself, right? I market my company. I post our work on Facebook and I'm all out. I'm doing it at all times. So marketing, yes, I spend a great deal of time spending free marketing, but social media, which just costs you nothing, learning how to do it, which again, I started, and if you look back at my Facebook, you know, I started just posting a picture here, a picture there. All of a sudden, my work starts getting a little better year after year. And then all of a sudden, we do phenomenal things. So every day, I try and spend a little bit of time either making a video or posting something. I can tell you the return's phenomenal because, number one, people see the work and they get to know you in the area. Number two, as soon as I post a kitchen, I'll get 2 or 3 people going, hey, I need you to come out. I'm ready for my kitchen. Done. No problem. We got you covered. So yes, I'm wrong. I do spend a lot of time on marketing. It's very, very important.
But you're not on paid ads and stuff. It's your time, right? Because we're all paying for marketing either with time or money or both, right? So,
correct.
So what's interesting, and again, you know, every now and then I go on these rants about you motherfuckers put your work on your personal Facebook profiles, right?
Yes.
I go to like these guys will ask a question to the group and I have a few minutes and I want to help them. So I'm like, oh, I wonder what they do. And I go to their personal profile and there's nothing there. Or it's, you know, they're wearing a jersey that says, you know, I don't know, some jersey with like, I don't know, 911, you know, trying to be all baller and shit and bongs and pictures and shit like this, right? So it's just, and I go to yours, like I'm pulling yours, yours is up right now.
Yep.
And there are things about the homes that you're selling. There are things about the kitchens you're doing. There's personal things of you at the gym. There's family pictures. Like, this is what I'm talking about when I tell people, like, be you in your social media, because people are hiring Sam.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
Like, yeah. You know, they're 100%
right.
I didn't even know the name of your damn business. I had to go look it up. Right. Because I can only imagine you've been chipping away at this for so long. And this is that compound effect that a lot of people don't get. They're like, oh, I did social media for 4 weeks, you know, and it didn't work. It's like, man, you got to keep showing up and become known as the guy to call for a kitchen or to flip a house. Or like that lady says, hey, Sam, you want to come buy my house? You know, because you've been, this is branding. This is exactly what we're talking about. So those of you that are listening that are arguing with me till you're blue in the face about keep work and professional life separate, you don't have much of a fucking professional life. I can promise you that. Because there is no separation anymore in our day and age.
No.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to blow a gasket.
Yeah, so you're right. Everything's on social media. You don't even have to be good at it. You just got to go do it. Like, don't complain about it. Don't try it. Again, don't get it perfect. Is my stuff perfect? Absolutely not. Do I make mistakes every day? Who cares? Everyone makes mistakes. Throw it out there. You know what I mean? Eventually, if you do it once a day, then you'll start doing it twice a day. And once you do that for year after year, then people are going to go, oh my God, he's all over social media. My biggest deal that I'll ever do, and I'm about 70% done. I hope this doesn't come out too soon, a little premature. But yesterday, I got walked into a deal where I'm buying land and I'm building a technical school for a high school. So I'm going to buy the land. I'm going to build the school. It's going to be for HVAC, you know, high school students. You know, it's going to be for carpenters. It's going to be for plumbers. And I can't believe it's my wildest dream. Like, there's no way I deserve to be where I'm at other than, you know, God, obviously God, you know, God helped me out. But, you know, that being said, I went in there and it was like the superintendent of the school and, you know, all these people and they're looking at me and they met me first time. And she's like, I think I know you. And, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, I said, I'm around, you know, we're open air. And later another guy comes in, oh, Sam, you're the one to do all the Eagles players. She goes, that's where I know you from. I said, oh, where do you know me from? She pulls up Instagram, goes, Showcase for Models. Here you are. Oh, I said, that's good.
See, yeah.
And every day I can go anywhere. I go down the shore. Oh, I know you from the Wildwood page. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, you're right. So if you put on your page, it's just your personal stuff. Like, hey, I went out drinking last night. Or, hey, I'm hungover. People see that. It's social media. I look it up. When I'm trying to hire somebody, I look them up. I'm like, yeah, this isn't somebody I want representing my company.
Yep.
Not at all. I want positive players around me. A players. Because A players bring A players. That's what you want. So anyone that talks negative on Facebook about anybody, especially somebody doing good, I totally discount them. And as far as competition, I got zero. I tell everyone, I got zero competition. The only person that I'm competing against every single day is the guy I look in the mirror. I look in the mirror and go, I'm ready to beat you today. I'm ready to beat you. And I do it every single day, a little bit better every single day. And listen, do I fall? Yeah, I fall all the time. But guess what? I get right back up, dust myself off, and keep going.
So what's something in you as a leader, business owner, entrepreneur, human being, whatever, that you're like consciously trying to improve in yourself currently?
So I think the main thing is I want to make sure that in myself that I'm portraying and being the best person I possibly can be to everyone. I want to treat, you know, the lowest person who sweetened the floors to the highest CEO exactly the same. I don't care how much money you have or don't have. I'll treat them exactly the same. And then the other thing I'm trying to improve, obviously, is giving back. Because, you know, I've been given a lot. You know, I've worked hard for what I've got, but I've been given a lot and I've got to see a lot. So in my social media, I don't know if you saw Christmas Eve, I was Elvis. That that story was on Channel 3, Channel 6. What I did there was, you know, a 9-year-old girl had cerebral palsy. She was having surgery and she was going to not be able to walk. her dad's a little older, so they needed a car. So we went around and we got Apollo car. They sell all used cars to give us a van, donate a van. I'm part of Wigs and Wishes, which is a nonprofit for cancer. We donate to that every year. I get involved with that every year. I'm able to give back that way. So I think trying to do stuff like that and giving back like that, it actually makes me a better person. And then the people who work for me, they can all tell you. I mean, some might curse me out, but at the end of the day, they all know I have their back. And that's how I feel like I've grown to the spot where I'm at. I could trust every single one of those guys and girls.
Fighters, become a profit-making machine and get your keister to Mile High Profit Summit 2024 in Denver, Colorado. Listen, this is the last Mile High. This is the last one. We've got a great run, and this is it. So if you've been meaning to get to Mile High, this is the one you're going to want to be at. And listen, you're going to want to get the VIP ticket. So here's the deal. In addition to the 2 days of the main event at Mile High Profit Summit with amazing speakers and sessions to help you grow your business, you get a VIP workshop day, all right, with 6 workshops to choose from, everything from building a great team to implementing systems in the business, rethinking how you're doing your marketing. All right, what do you do if you want to sell your business? The basics of Shin Fu, all right, leadership strategies for rapid profit growth. All these things are coming your way as a VIP ticket holder. So hit the damn link and get your butt to Mile High 2024. I'm out.
What I love about this is, you know, this is why I try to talk so much about getting oxygen for yourself. Like, you're a good-hearted dude, right? And if you're not getting oxygen for you and making money and profitable and earning as much as you can for the value you deliver, you can't do the good things you want to do in the world to the level you are. And I'm not saying if you're broke, you can't give to people and serve and things like that. But so many, I remember there was a guy years ago, we were talking about growing his business and this and that. And he did not, at the time, he did not have a strong business. And his dream was to build tiny home communities for veterans, okay, and give homeless veterans a place to live. Super noble thing. Problem was, he was putting the cart before the horse. He hadn't yet built anything, you know, so I'm not ripping on the guy's dream. I'm just saying, you can't paint the walls before the house is framed, right?
Correct.
And so what I love as your example is, like, you've been blessed, as you said, but I think you've also worked your ass off for it. You've been focused and disciplined and blessed. And to me, it's just shining light on, if somebody's listening to this, guys, it is not selfish for you to pay yourself. It's not selfish to make a lot of money. Like, what you do with it is on you, right? Like, money doesn't make you an asshole. If you're an asshole, you're an asshole with or without money. And and if you're a giving person, you can have more of an impact when you have more money. And as you said, I don't know, 20 minutes ago, you're like, pretty easy to make some big profits in construction, you know? So you want to have a big dent in the world, you know, get your shit together and run a kick-ass business, and you'll be able to serve more people. Not just, you know, buy a big ass house and, you know, be an ogre like everyone thinks, you know, entrepreneurs are.
Yeah.
But 42 employees. How do you find them?
Wow. That's the $1 million question, right?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, again, it's something that builds over time, and then it's something that you start to attract. So how you are to your employees is how, you know, they get pushed off and tell their friends about you, how that gets passed around. Social media is another good avenue. As you start to build, everything starts to grow in order. You have that foundation laid. I really feel like my best employee comes from my other employees. They're referred into us. It's not something that's coming from the outside. Once in a while, you get that outside person, but I feel like, you know, it kind of comes from within. I have in the past tried other things like a headhunter or someone that just does like recruiting. I haven't found exactly what I'm looking for out of that type of person. Because my wife's a way better judge of character than me. I'm not the best judge of character. I kind of have, oh man, I can make this guy great. I can make this guy great. You know, in an interview, everything's great. But then once you start going, I'm like, oh my God. I always told you so. Or just say, hey, I told you he was great. I'm like, yeah, you were right. She's right every single time. So that's why I think we work well together.
So it's funny because as you're saying that, it sounds like the queen and I'm not allowed, you know, my CEO and my employees and stuff long ago said, I'm not allowed to hire anymore because I like everybody initially. Like I can find a reason to hire anyone. Right. and I can see the best. And like my wife, she's, you know, wonderful, kind person, but she's as cynical as they come when you gotta earn your way in the circle with her and spot on. I remember one time I spoke at this event, this huge event this guy put on years ago. I had never met him in person. You know, he invited me to speak at the event, blah, blah, blah. And we walk in, I meet him. It was like the day before the event was starting and they were setting the big room up and this and that. We got there and I walk in and I meet him. We spend maybe 45 seconds with the guy and he had to go take care of some stuff. He walked away. My wife turns to me and she goes, don't fucking trust him. He is a snake. And I'll tell you what, it turned out exactly the way she said it. And it always has. So
That's great to have someone like that behind you. It's phenomenal, actually.
Yeah. Cause I'm like, what is it? The golden retriever? Like, hey, everybody's my friend, you know? What's your wife's name?
My wife's name's Jen.
Jen? Does she work in the company too?
She does. She does. So she does. She doesn't like talking to anybody. Okay. She's very, I guess, reserved, semi-introverted.
So she introverted? Like really introverted? Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. So she says I'm more the girl in the relationship. I'm the guy who goes out, does the design. I do all the talking. I do all the gossiping. She does none of that. So she says I'm more of the girl, right? So that being said, she does all the accounting. She does all the payroll. And we have, you know, every Wednesday we pay our subs. And then, you know, it's a lot of work. It is a lot of work. And hadn't it been for her on that back end, I'd never be where I am right now. And I can honestly tell you that.
And how long have you guys been married?
11 years.
All right. So did she join the business right away?
She did. She did.
Okay.
She joined it when literally I was living back at my duplex.
Okay.
And we started from, again, nothing. And that part was funny because, you know, $2,200 minivan. The place I was renting out back then for $750, I was still renting it out for $750. I fixed up my side, rented it out for $1,250, moved upstairs. And that's how we built it up from there. So when I left the police department, that's about when we started really getting serious and we built it up to where it's at now.
Okay, so I know we have a lot of people that are in business with their spouse, some degree. Was there ever a time where she was not supportive of what you were doing?
So like, I can tell you,
go ahead.
So I think she's always been supportive of me. But I always want to go to the, I'm always want to go to that next level. I always want to level up. So I think, I don't want to say she's non-supportive, but she's asking why do I want to keep going to make more money? So, so I want to do the bathroom division. She's like, we don't need it. Like we got everything. There's nothing that we can't buy. And I'm not saying that like, you know, to be cocky or whatever, because I could care less about anything, you know, material wise, it doesn't matter. But yeah, family wise, but guess what? I love doing it. So, you know, I think, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, back and forth with trying to do something new and actually now pay for marketing or before it's all free.
Yeah. Cause the reason I ask is I see a lot of, maybe I just see it more in the nature of my work because I work closely with people, couples and coaching and this and that, workshops that we do where, and I'll just speak husband, wife here. So if somebody's listening, don't be fucking offended. Just go with the flow here. All right. I just see it over and over and over where the wife gets to a point in the relationship where she's not as supportive anymore about the business because her husband's been a shithead and not honoring the commitments that he keeps making every year, right? Like, baby, this year is going to be different. We're really going to make some money this year. And I think what's cool about you is like, not that she's not supportive of you, but I think you have given her from just our conversation, you've given Jen a reason to keep betting on you because you lived in the duplex. You're like, this is our plan to do this. And you did it. Right. And then whatever your next plan was, you did it and you keep executing. And I think this is where your discipline also comes in, where you stay the course and you're just consistent in that. And that builds, like, I don't know about Jen, but my wife, she's all about security. Right. Yep. She wants security. She wants to know we have a plan. And if I'm abandoning that, chasing the next shiny thing all the time, she's never going to have security and confidence in me. And that's why I just bring it up, because I mean, every marriage has issues and, you know, bumps in the road or whatever it is. But I just think it's rare when I see people work together and it succeed the level that you guys have, because so whatever you're doing, you got a great thing going. There is my point. So what other than anything we've talked about with that, any low hanging fruit thing come to mind for advice to give somebody who's got their spouse working in the business?
Yeah. So, I mean, the main thing is you got to love doing what you're doing. So, you know, you got to put yourself in the position where you're able to succeed. You like you, because again, you're spending all this time doing this, and especially, you know, sometimes it's tough money wise in the beginning. Let me go back to the beginning, because a lot of people are in the beginning stages, and that's who should be listening to this, try and make themselves better. And even the guys who are established, I learned a lot of different things from people who are established too, and brand new. I can learn something from somebody that's brand new or somebody that runs a $300 million company. It doesn't matter. You can learn from anybody. But I think the biggest thing is, you know, being able to work it out together, being able to understand each other and grow together and set goals together and achieve those goals together. That makes it so much easier to get to that next level. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, you know, you're going to say, okay, what's the end game here? And how do you start planning for that? And, you know, that's where I'm, you know, even though I'm 15 years, 20 years before that, I want to know, hey, what's a good way to get out of this thing, you know, and still be successful and still be able to keep it running, but maybe not be here, you know, every single day or, you know, every other day. And again, another most important thing is you got to get time away. So even if it's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you go to an island or you go down the shore, you got to be able to spend time away from the business or it's going to eat you up.
Yeah. Are you good at taking time off?
I am.
Are you? Yeah. I can't relate to that. I don't have any hobbies. I love competing and winning and having an impact, and I'm a lunatic.
Like, and, I love it.
If I could wave a magic wand and change something about myself, it would be like that I learn how to unplug and chill. Yep. And I'm always, my mind is just always on. So I was just curious how you are.
Well, that's a funny story. So we went to Punta Cana, I guess 2 weeks ago. You know, everyone stays up late. I wake up early, no matter what. I don't care if I go to bed at 2, 3, I'm waking up at 5:30.
Yeah.
No alarm clock. That's why she calls me the old man. It's like, oh, the old man's already up. Well, guess what? Me, I'm trying to get better. I'm reading. I start reading whatever I can find. I end up hiring a virtual assistant from the Philippines. So now in the morning, I'm training this guy. She's like, what are you doing? She's like, I have him on FaceTime. I'm like, I'm training my new virtual assistant. She's like, what? You need to come in the pool. So we spent hours, you know, in the morning. You see, you know, everyone's sleeping. So why not get it done? So yeah, do I really turn it off? Probably not. But I love doing it. It's actually fun for me.
Yeah.
So yeah, we do go away a lot, but I also, you know, I like to spend time and try and get to that next level and try and when I come back, I'm supercharged. Everyone knows when I come back, when Sam comes back, he's going to be on fire. That's what I am.
It's funny. We were in Cabo, was it last spring, summer, spring, something like that. In fact, my CEO called me up one day and he's like, you're a little too high strung. You need to get out of here for a few weeks. And he's like, I'm serious, like go away for 3 or 4 weeks. And I'm like, I'll give you a week. So I left for a week. And we get to Cabo and we're at the Waldorf there. And it's one of our favorite places in Cabo. And we're sit down and I start this conversation. We start this conversation with these two couples that are next to us. The one guy's got a hat and glasses on. And I'm like, this fucker sounds familiar to me, right? And I'm not going to name drop who it was, but he's a mega star athlete, okay, in a very blue collar sport. We'll just put it that way, and beer drinking blue collar sport that goes really fast. How's that? There you go.
That's
and
great.
And so we're talking, and I'm out of nowhere. I go, you're so and so. Right. And everybody starts laughing. They're like, hey, about time you caught up to this. Right, Tom? So long story short, my wife and I, we were going to order dinner in the room that night. And me and my stupid, you know, like I'm always building a relationship, right? I'm always, you know, trying to learn something. I'm always picking somebody's brain. And I ended up pushing back our dinner that we were going to do in the room. And it kind of pissed her off, right? Because it was our first night there and this and that. And we're sitting there. And the next morning we wake up, you know, and I'm apologizing and all this other shit. And she just looks at me and she goes, I love you with all of my heart, But while we're here this week, can you just not be Tom fucking Reber for a few days?
It's in your blood, though. It's in your blood. That's what entrepreneurs do.
And so I took the message, and we had a great time the rest of the trip. But it was It's that intensity that you. I mean, you know, being an entrepreneur, man. There's no days off. I'm like, there's no moments off.
That's right.
Because your mind is always moving, and I get it. Like this, you got to unplug. Like when I go away, and when I do truly take like a day off, because I have them, but my mind is still going. But when I get away, don't work for a while officially, our company always does better. You know what I mean? I don't know what the hell it is. What's in the air? It's when I have my painting business all the way through now, 20 something years later, I can tell you that whenever I take time off and get the hell away, my phone rings more with deals. We collect. I don't know what's going on. Maybe I should just not work anymore and just take 100% of the time off. What would happen then, right? But yeah. Can I go back to this real estate thing a minute?
Sure.
So I had a guy that I know who was over a couple weeks ago. We were talking. He just lost everything a couple years ago. Like he's in his late 40s. I'm 54. I don't know how old are you.
I'm 44.
44. Okay, so he's about your age. Lost everything, bankruptcy, this and that. And he's, you know, trying to build back. And he's like, he said to me, I'm so behind the retirement eight ball because he's lost everything, right? And so if you were to lose everything in your mid-40s and have to build back, would your, and maybe this already is, like, and he had lost a ton of money, you know, he had monies in the stock market and all this other stuff, lost his house, this and that. Where would you put your efforts to build back?
So I think I would do exactly the same, but I would pretty much be knowledgeable on what's going on. I think I would just start the same thing over with the construction, making sure that you just build it out lean, making sure that it's profitable from the start. And as it grows, I would do exactly the same. I would, you know, figure out a way to leverage, if I didn't have the cash up front, leverage the banks, leverage private money. There's a lot of hard money. I fund all my own deals now, but you know, and you know, it's a lot more money for houses than it was before, but there's so many opportunities out there, low interest rates, that you could, even if you don't have a construction business, you could take something like I made a 42 point checklist for my house flips. So even if you never did a house flip before, as long as you follow that list, you could do a flip in order, not go out of order, not get hurt. If everything's done right and you're checking it, you will make money every single time, no questions asked.
Yeah.
So I would start doing that, and then I would scale that up to a certain level. And then I would take that profit from there again, and I would buy those rental properties. And these construction guys are so talented. I see so much talent go to waste because they take their money, $3,000 or $5,000, whatever they made that week, and on Monday they're going, hey, can I borrow $20 for lunch? I'm thinking, what did you just do with that? $3,000? Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure you see it way more than me because you're living in it with the flips and stuff. But like so many contractors talk about, they want to get into flips and real estates and all this other stuff. And I was talking to a guy who's flipping in Denver and used to be in one of our programs. Now we're just buddies and we see each other. But anyway, he was doing retail remodeling, right? And he was trying to do flips. And long story short, he woke up one day and he's like, I got to pick a lane here because it's two very different business models, right? You know, us, we're always like, get a 50% gross profit. And then he tries that formula with investors and shit. And it's like, it ain't happening. So what he's ended up doing is he's worked it out where he's got a money partner, buys the property, the contractor funds the project, pays for everything in the project at his cost to produce, right? Sure. And then they do a 50-50 profit split when the house sells. That's how he's been doing that and he's killing it. And that's their a
great partnership.
Yeah. So I think, can you speak to those that want to, like, what are your thoughts? I mean, what are your thoughts on, like, you're a little different here because you've been in the game a long time and you've got some divisions and delegation and things like that. But for the guy who's not, trying to walk in both worlds.
Yep.
What advice do you have there that might be helpful?
So a couple things. First of all, that retail, you know, and then also doing the flips, they're two different animals altogether, mm-hmm. right? So you got to treat those the same but differently in the respect of the guy that's doing a retail kitchen is going to cost you way too much than the guy that's doing the flip kitchen, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot more basic. The money needs to be at a certain level. The mm-hmm. quality, you know, you try and get the quality the same as you can. But, you know, my retail guys, they have to be clean because, you know, at the end of the job, you're in somebody's home, right? Mm-hmm. They're, at the end of the day, mm-hmm. they don't care how good the job is. You can be, you know, average, but if it's dirty mm-hmm. and it's perfect, they're complaining nonstop. If it's a pretty good job and there's a little bit of dust, a little bit of dirt, they're going to go, eh, you know, it kind of gets tough. So you want to have your best guys do the best job you possibly can mm-hmm. and clean up on the retail side. And then I have separate crews just for the flips. And I really move them from one to another. Now, for the contractor that might not have the money and they partner up with somebody, you know, some company that does the finance and they split it, I think it's also a great model to do. Mm-hmm. So I think for those guys, you know, and I've had a few of them. Where I come in, I'll buy the property. They'll run the job. I give them the job scope. I let them fill it out. I show them how I do it. I usually sign them into like a three-term deal where we do three together before they can go out on their own. And they usually find those deals, or sometimes I'll even bring them to them. Because again, I'm giving. So if someone brings to me, I like to give it back to them. And that's with anything. So I think that's a great model to do, to be able to partner in, especially in the way the economy's gone over the last couple of years anyway. It's yeah. good to bring on somebody as a safety net, but also as a way to leverage yourself and build yourself up and grow. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of different ways you can make money in real estate doing the flipping.
Okay. You're a real estate investor. Are you cheap?
I am absolutely cheap.
Okay. But yeah. you know where I'm going with this, right? Because you see guys post on Facebook or in the group or whatever, and they're like, you know, this investor reached out to me and I priced the project this, and he's like, oh, you're five times, you know, all these investors are cheap. I hear all investors are cheap. All GCs are cheap. All home builders are cheap. I don't buy that. No, so, no, what's, yeah, so speak to investors okay. being cheap.
Yep. All right. So anytime someone calls me and says, hey, I'm a new investor. I'm buying a home. I would like you to do the flip. I would say, hold on a second. I'm going to refer you to another contractor. Why do I do that? Well, they usually watch too many episodes of HGTV, right? They want you to build yep. some elaborate deck, and they have yep. no idea what my worth is. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying I'm worth a lot. I'm talking about any contractor, even if you're new.
Right.
I feel like, for the most part, I see a lot of these people going, I'm looking for an investor-friendly contractor. Well, that's not any of Tom Reber's people, right?
Right.
Run. Just run. Just run. I'll tell you right now, run. Right? What you want. And that's why, honestly, I only work for two other people doing the flips. This is how I do it. You trust me or you don't. I look at the deal. I know how much it's going to cost me. I know how much I want to make. I might not be perfect with numbers, but I'm pretty close. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure that the guy on the other end is making money. So I can tell you, I have long-standing relationships with these guys. But that's the other thing. I pick everything. They pick nothing. I pick the color. I pick the cabinets. Now, I don't go cheap on that. I usually get the middle of the road. Because again, the cheapest isn't the best. Mm-hmm. Plus, you're putting your name on there. So you want to be able to build a good name for yourself. So never go with the cheapest. Always go with something in the middle, something quality, something you want to stand behind. And then when you do that, you start to grow. So I think it's the guys that, you know, again, watch too much HGTV trying to mm-hmm. tell you, hey, I got this designer coming out. You know, that's when you'll lose your butt, you'll yeah. make no profit, and it'll be a long, drawn-out process. Same thing for, you know, a lot of realtors, they don't respect contractors. They don't respect their time. And that's why I charged before I started watching you. Mm-hmm. I was free estimates everywhere. I'd run around in my car like, oh, yeah, it's another estimate. Well, guess yeah. what? They're like, oh, you know, thank you for your estimate. What happened? Well, they ended up using your thing as a credit. You know, credit. No more credit. Sam does no prints no more. So yeah, what yep. I charge is $350. You want me to come out $350? $350. The other guy's a free. Well, go with the free guy. Yeah, see what you get. You go.
Have fun.
See what you get. And then they'll call me back. Okay, we need you. But you gotta respect yourself, and you gotta be able to invest in yourself, bank in yourself. So yeah, realtors, investors, all that stuff. You know, there is good ones out there, but you gotta be able to sort it out. You know, it's kind of my biggest advice with that.
You know, I think I think where people go wrong, where contractors go wrong, we'll speak realtors and investors, just those two things right there, is they fail to understand what the biggest pain is of a realtor or an investor, right? Like right. They approach it, and I made this mistake too, so I'm not ripping on people, but like as a contractor, you approach it as a contractor instead of what's important to the other person. The investor, yeah, they have a budget they're trying to work with, but as an investor, I would imagine the number one pain is speed, right?
Right.
Let this fucker needs to get done and on the market.
That's right.
Speed is king, right? That's their pain. And with a realtor, they want a commission check.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And so when people are like, I mean, dude, we did 300 plus paint jobs a year, and I bet you 75 minimum were from realtors, maybe 100, maybe a third were from realtors. And because I knew what was important to them, and I would go do these lunch and learns at these big brokerages, and I would talk about, you know, hey, we have this painter for a day thing that my buddy Dave invented that I ripped off. And we'd send a painter for 8 hours to do some curb appeal so your client could get that fucking house on the market and you could get paid. That's how we spoke to them without the F-bombs. And like, hey, you got, I go, raise your hand if you have a client right now who's putting their house on the market with you and they're refusing to paint the house or to do some work inside, and half the hands went up. And I said, why don't they want to do it? They're like, they don't want to spend that much money and all this other shit. I'm like, all right, well, for $600, I can send a guy to their house and they have the paint sitting there, and you want us to paint the front door for them. You want us to touch up the baseboards in the foyer, whatever it is, and fix a drywall thing in the laundry room, this and that. We're there for 8 hours. We're years. Dude, that got us in the door like crazy because we understood the pain of the realtor.
Absolutely.
And so they want to sell the damn house.
That's right.
And then on the other side, we had gift cards that we would give when you sold a house, and at the closing, you know, realtors would give a gift, you know, like wine and a basket. And we'd put a gift card in there, $500 worth of painting. And now they're using that. I'd send a guy there, be $250 for the labor for the day. He'd paint a room or so. And now we're in the house, and my guy was trained how to upsell. Next thing you know, it's a $13,000, $15,000 project because they just moved in and they need the house painted.
You hit it there. You hit it on the head, though. Mm-hmm. So you're doing what most contractors don't do. You're building the value, mm-hmm. right? You have something that you're offering them. You're giving them something with value for them and for their customers. You're spending that time. A lot of people don't want to spend that time. And if you don't want to spend that time, you know, people are going to get the cheapest price every time. If you're starting to build that relationship and rapport, I bet you when you work with your realtor's stuck with you. And then those ones that stuck with you, then you can make money because they already know what to expect from you. So you're setting that expectation. Hey, I'm not going to be $100 for the day for my guy. I'm going to be X, right?
Yeah.
And then, but I'm going to perform and you're going to have a happy customer at the end. So when you build that value up, that's why I like to stay with, you know, a few group of realtors versus a big bunch. Build my relationship because, again, everyone's going to have their contractor or their guy or their people to go to. And if you get with those people and you get with those realtors, well, guess what? They're in homes every single day. So why not build your relationship together? So when you're in there, someone needs a home, they give you work. Guess what? You pass it back to them. Hey, this person wants to sell their house. Done.
Yeah. I'm sitting here similar to you where you've been in the game long enough, building these relationships. People are coming to you going, hey, buy my house. That's a lot of what I had going on from our realtor network. There are a couple that I can think of right now that started out, you know, as a small little job, and then it snowballed through the years. And it got to the point where one of them, she would call me up and she'd be like, hey, the bank owns this house. It's a short sale. They need to get it off their hands. It just needs a coat of white inside, no blue tape, nothing picky. What are you going to charge me? And I'm like, hold on, I'll call you back. I'd call one of my subs and I'm like, hey, if I hand you the keys Friday night on this job, it needs to be done by Monday morning. How much do you want? And I'd send him a picture of the house and he'd go, give me $3,000 for the labor, right? I'd turn around, call her back, and I'm like, it's $8,000. She's like, all right, done deal. Like it literally got to the point where, and we were doing 20 of those a year that was on over the weekends where we'd make, you know, $3,000-$4,000 profit just doing nothing. And so, and then And then that person gets promoted and now they're part of a national big real estate company that has all the, I mean, I'm just saying, like, the power of the connections and stuff. That's why I get so pissed when guys are like, oh, fuck realtors and this and that. I'm like, no, you just got to find the right one.
You can't. Yeah.
You know,
you find the right place to grow with them. And it always comes, that's why you treat everybody with respect too, because it always comes back to you, no matter what. Literally, you treat everybody with respect. You know, years later, I'll see somebody, oh, you know, that guy's a great guy. He was a great guy. And, you know, that's actually what I want to hear, all that stuff, as far as when you start building up with realtors or anybody for that matter.
Yeah. I mean, help them get paid. You help them get paid, you'll be their guy forever.
Absolutely.
You know? And back to the gift card thing, I want to share this just for people listening here. A lot of people are like, well, Tom, you're always saying don't go out and do a job for less than 50% gross profit and all this other shit.
Yep.
We were spending money to get a lead and a sale. You have a cost per lead and a cost per sale, right?
Correct.
And so, you know, if I just pull out my calculator, if you're spending 10 grand a month on marketing and you're getting, you know, 75 leads, it's $133 a lead. Well, right. Those 75 leads, if 35 of those turn into a job, 10 grand divided by 35, you're paying $285 for the job.
That's right.
What Mark Cuban's going to ask you on fucking Shark Tank. He's going, what's it cost you to acquire a customer? In this case, the math I did, it's $285. So for me to spend $250, whatever it is, to put a painter in somebody's house without any competition, I'm paying for the customer.
Absolutely.
I'm spending the same money. I'm just not going out and bidding it. Now I'm in the house. You send your best guy in there, right? And knock him out of the park. And they go, hey, was there anything else that you were wanting done that I could price up for you while we're here?
Yeah.
And it was like damn near 100% of the times we you know, sold a ton more work. Because again, when somebody's moving into a house, those first 60 days, they're like 90% more likely to do home improvement shit. So that's when you want to be there. So, and then you got a customer for life.
Yeah. Plus you forgot one important thing there, Tom.
What's that?
So once you're in a neighborhood, you put your sign up, you see your van there.
Yep.
Now you got attention. Now you got attention. Now the neighbor's calling you. Next thing you know, and there's streets right now, you know, I have two or three signs on each street in the whole neighborhood. And then all of a sudden I saw your van. Now you'll see on my Facebook, people take pictures all over the place and go, hey, your truck, your new truck. And now I just try and do different things and go, hey, I've never seen this one before. And they're taking pictures and sending it to me all the time. And that's how you build it up. So again, I might not have made my 50% gross profit on this, but now I'm in that neighborhood. And now we're working, you know, working different customers and, you know, making them happy, and they pay us on your name, and just keeps going.
Snowballs, man. There was a guy who had a window company, replacement window company. We'll just say it was Reber Windows. It wasn't, but you know, and every spring, you talked about the signs. Dude, his only marketing was for like 2 weeks in the springtime. This is outside of Chicago. He would contact, he'd been in business 20, 25 years. He would contact his whole database and, long story short, get them to allow him to put a yard sign in during a 2 week period in our town. And the town had a population of 150,000 in Naperville, Illinois, okay, outside of Chicago. And for like 2 weeks, everywhere you drove, you saw this guy's signs. I mean, hundreds of them.
That's hundreds. Genius.
So he would call you up and go, hey, Sam, can we drop a sign and give you a $50 gift card to where Visa gift card? And you're like, yeah. You know, a lot of people, longtime customers, like, yeah, don't worry about that. Just put the sign in, keep it up as long as you want. You know how it works.
Oh, yeah.
And dude, so he was just like, I'm going to take everything I have and whole asset, right? I'm going to whole ass my sign campaign for 2 weeks every spring. And that would book the whole year for him every year.
That's great.
Like,
that's
dude, great. It was crazy. And
that's what you got to do.
Yeah. Cause it's, you know, it's that brand awareness, and people got to, you know who they were. So what, before we get out of here, what have we not talked about, or have I not asked you that we should have? Anything?
So I think we covered a lot, like, you know, winning, losing, in between. Trying to think what a good thing would be as far as takeaways. So I think the takeaways that I had are, number one, definitely coaching. So learning as much as you possibly can from guys like yourself that have been doing it and made the mistakes, saving time, investing in yourself. I think we talked about that too. You know, starting the business up, trying to be lean. We went over that. And then I think, you know, my main takeaway is, hey, try and get better every single day that you're around. I think that's like the key to leveling up in life, in business, and just all the way around.
I love it. So Sam, if somebody wants to come work for you or hire you, do a deal with you, whatever, where do they find you? Where do you want them to go?
I would just go right on either Facebook or Instagram, go on my Showcase Remodels page, you know, like the page, send me a little message, a little bit about yourself, kind of what your goals may be and what you're looking to do. And especially if you have, you know, I have no problem sharing any of my experience, even local guys are like, oh, I know I'm your competitor. I'm like, no, you're not. what do you need?
Yeah.
You know, I see you have something in your kitchen is the way you have that checklist. Well, yeah, I'll just shoot it over to you. No problem. Mm-hmm. I don't mind it at all. Because, you know, awesome. We help each other out. It makes everybody that much better.
It does. It does. And we'll make sure that we drop those links in the description and show notes and all that stuff. Man, this was fun. I had a blast. You're easy to talk with. And I appreciate you being so open about things. And I guarantee you that you helped a bunch of people here today. So
great.
Guys, check out the links that we have posted here. Give Sam a follow. Pick his brain. Do a deal with him. Be his next foreman, whatever you want to do. And Sam, with that, appreciate you, buddy. Guys, rate the show, share it with another contractor. You guys rock. We got to roll. You're out. We're out. You're out. We're out. I'm out. You're out. I don't know. We're out. We are out.